I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Wait, are you gaming? On a Chromebook?
Yep. It's got a high-res 120Hz display, plus this killer RGB keyboard. And I can access thousands of games anytime, anywhere.
Stop playing.
What?
Get out of here.
Huh?
Yeah, I want you to stop playing and get out of here so I can game on that Chromebook.
Got it.
Discover the ultimate cloud gaming machine, a new kind of Chromebook.
The Sony PlayStation. Now see the outstanding technical capabilities of Sony's advanced video game system, and how game developers the world over can now create a stunning new generation of interactive entertainment.
Doing? You're here to listen to Play Retro, episode 21. It is Tuesday, May 31st, 2022. I'm your host, Scott Johnson, and I say more like Battle Arena Toe Chagrinden.
Oh, Chagrinden. And I am your other host, Brian Dunaway, and I just spent $299 on this gaming system, and I am praying there's a demo disc inside. Yes.
Yeah, there's always a demo disc in there. Always. And they got, and they're black. Maybe. Remember that? They were black discs.
Oh. Yeah, that's my, that was my favorite thing about the PlayStation 1 games. They were black, really for no reason other than it looked really cool.
It just looked cool. It looks so much cooler than anybody else's ideas for what to do with your discs. They're all regular old CDs, and Sony came along and said, "Yeah, but what if they were jet black?"
We're going to get into a big discussion about CDs because this was early on with CD stuff, and PlayStation did it right. GameCube, by the time we got to the Nintendo GameCube, which are those little mini discs, Nintendo thought it'd be really cool if they painted a lot of cool graphics on their disc, and they, and now we're paying that price because the GameCubes, if the thicker the paint, the more art illustrations on it, the greater chance it is it's going to peel, and that the data is on the back of that paint, man.
Yeah, yeah.
And they, once they peel off, it's gone.
Yeah, it's a mistake.
Gone.
But I also wonder sometimes if Nintendo knew what they were doing, because the goal with the tinier discs was them saying, "We're going to do a we're going optical. So everybody, calm down. But we're going to go optical in a way that's really hard to copy. You're going to have this tiny little disc. Nobody's going to be able to just burn these. You know, they're going to be unique to our system, and." Maybe they put the paint on there because they knew that they'd start to go bad and nobody could.
I wouldn't doubt it. A bunch of turds. I don't think they did because but yeah, I wouldn't doubt it. I wouldn't put it past Nintendo. Hey, look, we don't hate Nintendo here. We just know who Nintendo is.
Yeah, we acknowledge who they are, what they do, what their tactics are. It's fine. We get used to it. Anyway, we got a bunch to talk about today. Some of those things you've heard are all hints. We'll get to that in a minute. I played Pac-Man Museum 2, the new compilation.
Yes.
I know you did as well. So it came out on Game Pass day one, PC and Xbox. Played it in both places, and I'm super bummed to tell everybody, although I'm hearing there's a patch coming, so it's going to be fixed, but there's something wrong with the console version of that game. It's like F.
Yeah, the Xbox Game Pass version is busted from everything I am reading, and so I'm kind of glad I just got it off Steam for $20. And
well, the PC version, the PC version on Game Pass is fine, no issues. I played both.
Right.
They're fine, and they're even syncing fine in terms of saves and stuff. And progress, but there's an input lag problem on the Xbox, and nobody can explain what the hell's going on. So Hopefully.
It looks like Namco has once again released one of their museum packs that isn't quite ready for prime time. Will they fix it or will people just be mad? And Namco loves doing this. They'll release another version in a couple of years.
Yeah.
And we'll all have forgotten.
Yeah. They'll call it Pac-Man Museum 3 and somehow convince us it's awesome and still not include Miss Pac-Man. So those bastards.
Right. This time we'll include Miss Pac-Man. We promise. This time we'll get all the rights and we don't mind paying the royalties. Who is it? Who's the Atari people who at games something at? Is that at Play Games? What's that stupid thing called?
Hold on. Someone owns Miss Pac-Man and they won't let them use it.
Yeah, it's like at games or something who does all the little who bought a bunch of stuff at one point in time because they were selling all the stuff.
I'm trying to find the current owner and I can't. We're going to talk about Pac-Man a lot next week, but
It's coming.
But Miss Pac-Man is currently owned, there it is, at Games.
Yeah.
In August 2019, at Games, company specializing in micro consoles, featured older arcade games and acquired the royalties owned by GCC. They approached them about Miss Pac-Man and potential products tied to it. So they got the
rights.
At
Games was making all these little. They were getting the rights to these games and selling and bundling them all these little small individual devices. They were making like mini Ataris and mini things. You could buy them like at Walmart, Walgreens, a Wall Place.
But if you're Namco, how do you let go of the best Pac-Man game? How do you do that?
Yeah.
How do you take the one? Look, Pac-Man, iconic. I get it. Pac Attack, great. Pac-Land 1 and 2, having a good time. All the Pac-Man spinoffs, all that stuff is great. No complaints, no problems. But the best thing you ever made was Miss Pac-Man. Right. It's the best playing one of these games. It's the best maze game of all time. And you gave the rights to some Chode Monkey company I've never heard of?
I don't think they gave all the rights away. I think they made a deal where, if I remember reading the article correctly, I read it yesterday, so I've already forgotten it. They have to pay a certain percentage or something every time they release it. So they still have the rights, but then they have this little rider, and they're so bitter. They're like, we're not doing it. We're not giving you nothing at Games.
Yeah.
And I'm like, just give them their little penitence. Just give it to them so we can have Miss Pac-Man.
I agree. It needs to happen. There are plenty of good versions of Miss Pac-Man. The Genesis and SNES version of that game is just fine, great, as equal to the arcade as probably you're ever going to find.
Man, we're going to talk so much about Pac-Man next week.
Yeah, next week's a big Pac-Man week. So also this news happened this week where I heard this from a bunch of sources and of course, you were up to your hands in it as well, but we both got informed on Twitter about, because the Xbox no longer requires the admin password stuff, like the developer password junk to do, slightly skeevy things on the hardware. Somebody very apparently relatively easily and gloriously frame rate, widescreen, just beautiful rendition is I suddenly see somebody playing a Series X and they're playing Super Mario Galaxy 1 and 2 on there.
Yeah.
And it looked fan-freaking-tastic. And apparently it's all the rage right now. Everybody's losing their minds about the Series X doing this. So Brian, when do I get my hot little package of image software that I can now load onto my Series X? When's this happening?
Exactly. I talked about this in the Discord community server, the Frog Pants Discord community server a lot. People are like, oh, you're going to just, you and Scott going to do it. I'm like, well, first of all, Brian's a fiddler, jump hooper. I'm going to figure out all the BS and then I'm going to package it all nicely and just give it to Scott.
Oh, yeah. I'm just going to get a thumb drive ready and he's going to send me the shit and I'm going to put it on.
Right. Because it is RetroArch. So there's two ways you can still do it. You can do it the way that we already able to before. You have a developer agreement license where it's only like $19. So if you want to go into dev mode on your Xbox, which is fine, it's $19. You pay it to Microsoft and then you can load, you can put your Xbox into series into developer mode and you can load stuff in. Like I just downloaded the Xbox version from the RetroArch site and threw it in there. But you're right. Things have changed. Now I can use the retail version from the store of the RetroArch and throw in a USB drive and play this. And so you don't have to go through all the developer hoops. It's only $19. And it's really not that big.
Yeah, but there's still a bunch of other hoops. I don't want to do hoops. No hoops.
Yeah. There's a little bit of hoop, but there's not a lot of hooping. It's very few hoopings.
Brian's going to fix the hoops so that
I'm going to walk ahead of you. I'm going to poke all the landmines, figure out where they're at.
Yeah.
And then I'm just going to send you an image. It's going to have RetroArch. It's going to have a couple of flavor, you know, a couple of flavor games you like.
Yep.
And the games that you already own. And then you can just...
They are games I already own. Yeah. That's right. I have a stack of games in the other room. Two of them are the two Galaxy games. And I don't have a way to play those anymore because my Wii died. So getting a new Wii is a pain in the
ass. That happens when you get older.
Yeah. And I want digital, and I own those games. So gosh dang it, let's get it on there. And it looked like they were having no problem playing that with like a freaking, you know, controller, with a Series X controller. And it just looked like a blast. So I am
It's interesting. Because it's RetroArch, so if you don't know what RetroArch is, it is a like a platform that handles your cores and your controllers and everything else. It handles all the upper stuff, the interfacing stuff, user interfacing.
Right.
And I did. I modified my Series S. So the Series S and X both had the same CPU, and that's how this is being emulated. It's not being done through any GPU stuff. So you should be fine, even if you have that. Well, you can pick up one of those Series S's for like $299 right now. What PlayStation said, is that what Sony said? $299 They've got tons of the S's at the Walmart. Just they're all over the freaking place.
Yeah,
and you can get S's, man, no, if you're trying right to get now into, if you're trying to get into retro gaming and you're like, I don't have a PC really worth anything, this is a really beefy, you know, machine for what it does for the price.
Here's what I'm hearing from people. Here's what I'm hearing from people. If you have a Series X or you have a Steam Deck, or you have both, you now have the two best emulation devices on the market that aren't the Fido, Philo, whatever it is thing you're doing.
Yeah. And you're like, you're in the 64-bit era, you're in beyond, you're up to the, you know, to the Wii. I mean, you're using the Dolphin emulator, and it so, of course, it runs GameCubes and the Wii stuff. It runs all of it just fine. I tested some of it. I got a little bit of lag on the Galaxy 2, but
when you say lag, what do you mean? Input lag or what?
Rendering lag.
Rendering lag.
It was enough, when there's a lot of things, because you know you collect the stars and things.
Yeah.
I did see a little bit. I saw a little bit of lag. You know, the screen was lagging out. Yeah. But I don't know exactly if there is some tweaking I can do, because I'm running this on a solid state drive external. And it's using like a J Micron controller chipset for this thing, and I'm like thinking maybe I need to get something else, or maybe I still got a little bit of research to do. It's the reason why I haven't just packaged up and said, here you go, Scott. There's some things you got to do, because I tried to follow some tutorials online. A lot of them are out of date, even though they just came out like in late last year, early this year.
Yeah.
And I'm like, these are already out of date, and I had to kind of throw a bunch of the stuff away and just, you know, wing it, which is fine because I know a lot about RetroArch.
Yeah.
And so if you ever have any questions, by the way, feel free to send an email to playretroshow@gmail.com or hit us up on Twitter @playretroshow. And I'd be more than glad to point you in the direction to anything that we're talking about here. And if you have like little small questions about how to, you know, how to play some retro gaming, let me know.
Yeah, a lot of the stuff we read on the show, but quite often they're just really small or you know, simple questions we can ask or answer on the email, and Brian answers a lot of those before I even get there. Yes. I got there today and I was like, all right, which emails are we doing today? Oh, these are all grayed out. What happened? Oh, he replied to everybody. So a couple of these are ones we already replied to for the individual, but you know, I think the world will enjoy what we talked about, so we'll read them again.
Yes, we'll read them again. We had a really big backlog of emails, and I felt guilty. It was gnawing away at me. I'm like, oh,
yeah,
remember, you know how I see this thing, how I see the Play Retro Show? It's kind of like fulfilling that dream. I always kind of wanted to work like with a gaming magazine.
Yeah.
And I always loved the idea of answering those emails, because those people are such assholes in the editorial stuff. I'd kind of love it. I'd love to, you know. People write in a message, you know, write in a mail through the snail mail. You get it. You tear it apart and tell them what a dumbass they are.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they can't do anything about it, right? What are they going to do? They're going to send another mail? What are they going to do?
Nothing. They can't do anything.
Nothing. So you always look right, because you get the last word.
That's right.
Right there in your magazine.
Damn straight.
So,
well, keep those emails coming, you guys, because it is pretty great. All right. Today, we do this.
Shall we play a game?
How about a number of games? This is the first time I've done this. We're looking at a console and the games that it launched with. We're going to focus on those games. and see, in retrospect, how they held up. There's kind of a long-standing tradition in consoles, going way back, that quite often the launch titles are not the great ones, or the ones that you think of as the great titles in the long run. Sometimes that's not true. Mario 64 held a very special place in the launch lineup for the entirety of the N64's run. There have been other examples of, I think, you know, really solid launch titles, like Soul Calibur for the Dreamcast was a massive hit and that a good game throughout. Plenty of other examples of that, but most of the time...
I meant to look up to see if... Did Halo launched with the original Xbox, right?
Original Halo launched...
Am I remembering that correctly?
Halo Combat Evolved launched with the Xbox, and that's right. Another good example of a solid, you know, going to be there forever. And everyone will always think of it. But there's tons of other games that launched aside next to Halo or any of these other examples that were just trash, just garbageware. Yeah. Now, you know, I went a little nuts when the PlayStation came out. I was like, I'm going to get a bunch of these. And I did. How did they hold up? How are they today? What's the deal with these? Well, we're going to get into them. So a little bit of history real quick. PlayStation 1 initially launched in Japan in the holiday season, December of that year, 1994.
Right.
All right. They sold 102 million consoles and numerous versions of this thing before they stopped production in 2004. That surprised me that it went as long as 2004, where we're well into the PlayStation 2 time. Yeah. We're only a year from like 360 and PlayStation 3, and they're still making PS1s.
They were literally making the hardware consoles all the way up until 2004. That's the reason why when you go on eBay looking for a PlayStation 1 or PSX, you're probably going to find one for a fairly decent price.
Yeah, because there's tons of them.
102 million.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you ever get the little mini one? I don't mean the one recently, but the old mini where they shrunk it down and made a tiny version of it. Do you remember that?
Yeah. You're talking about the PS, what's it called? SCPH2, it's not the 5000, what's the next one? Yeah,
whatever that was.
The little rounded off edges and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I never had that. Yeah. I wanted that. Mine was old, OG, and it was fine, but I wanted that.
I never did that because from the get-go, when I got my PlayStation, my PSX, I was ready to modify it because I didn't get mine until, I think, 96. I didn't get it to like almost a full year after. And people were modifying it with chips, and I wanted that because you had to have the one with the parallel port.
Right. Plus, it's expensive.
Yeah. Why my money?
Because it's so expensive. I had to show you some money.
So expensive.
People at home.
I love the little animated money.
Some animated money up on the screen.
Threw it up.
A couple of
$2.99.
$2.99 is what you paid. Various colors: gray, black, white, green, blue. Although initially, I think only the gray was available.
In the U.S. there was only the gray. Yeah.
I tried to get. I wanted a different color at launch, but they just weren't doing them, which is fine. Yeah. I ended up with a gray one. This is just a little side note. Went early in the morning, waited in line in a mall, at a software, et cetera.
Was it Babbage's? Was it a software, et cetera. Was it like a KB Toys or something?
It may have been Babbage's. I don't freaking remember. Okay. They all ended up being
a mall.
It was a mall. Yeah. It was a mall. Which, by the way, I went to a mall the other day. Malls are kind of fine still. They're fine.
Right.
I like a mall. It's fine.
I love a mall.
Yeah. I went in there. I hung out in the Apple store. Went over to the GameStop for a while. You know, the two or three stores I give two shits about, and I had a corn dog and got out of there. It was great.
I'm indoor people. All right. I love the mall. I love the mall. Everything's indoor. I don't have to go outside. I don't have to walk between. I don't have to walk the hot pavement in like a strip mall or anything.
Right.
I like an indoor mall where I can just walk around.
I agree. I'd walk around in a mall with you, Brian, if we could work that out.
Yeah.
Let's do that.
I would love that. That would be fantastic. We could hold hands, you know, and swing them back and forth like this, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Let's do it with our bags of things that we bought. Anyway, so when I got my first one, it was the OG version of it. I remember it was wrapped in pink plastic, which I just thought was so odd. I'll never forget that for some reason.
Okay.
The console itself. So inside, you open the box and pull it out. Inside, everything's wrapped in this pink plastic.
Oh, yeah. You talk about that green. Yeah. Yeah. I know what you're talking about. That pink plastic. Yeah.
Yeah. They do some green as well, but I think it's basically anti-static stuff. Bags,
it is.
Whatever.
It is. Right.
Anyway, get that home, plug it in.
Probably had a warning and said, do not eat.
Yeah, do not eat this.
It's not a toy.
But we ran fine for a day. And then it burned up on me. It overheated or something. Something went wrong. It was a defect. And so I went back to that same mall And the guy goes, "Oh, this was unfortunate." And I said, "Well, yeah, I just paid you $2.99 plus I bought like five games. It's a little unfortunate." And he's like, "Well, let me see what I can do. You know, this is a hot thing right now. I don't know if I'm And he leaves.
"Well, it was a little too hot, mister."
He goes in the back. He comes back out and he says, "Good news. If you stay here through 4 o'clock, the new driver's coming. They've got two on the truck. I'll hold one for you." And I said,
That's awesome.
I said, "That's great. You're the man." So that's what I did. I hung around the mall, came back in there, truck arrived, got my replacement PlayStation, took my memory card, kept my memory card. So all my saves were still good and all that.
Yeah.
But there
was a couple of launch. We don't, you know, everybody knows about the Xbox Ring of Death. That's the 360 Ring of Death. That was such a big, there were such a large a percentage of those that were bad. But yeah, the PlayStation 1 had problems with that, the heating problem and a laser problem.
Yep, laser issues. So, the laser alignment issues. And I think pretty much mine was a heat issue because it seemed like maybe a chip melted or something. I don't know what happened. It stunk.
You were sitting on it because you thought it was an egg.
It had a weird smell came out of there is all I'm saying.
Burning electronics. That's my least favorite smell in the whole wide world.
It's not a good smell. No, I don't like it. It means I got to replace them, so I don't like it.
When that smoke escapes, everything is done.
Now, when you boot that thing up, here's what y'all heard that day. Yeah, that's pretty iconic, right?
That is so sexy. Sony.
They're good at the intros. They're good at them.
Yeah.
Even the new ones.
Sony PS5. Sony had been doing audio for a very long time, and man, did it sound fantastic! And putting headphones on and listening to that this past week while I've been doing the simulation of this game, of this console, man, it's so sexy.
Do you have a favorite? So two had the like symphonic music, so it sounded like a symphony getting started, and then three, I don't remember very well. Four was fine. Five, I really like PS5's music.
I didn't have five. I want to say that I actually liked, I want to say for some reason I liked the PS3, but the heck if I can remember what it was. I used to just turning it on and letting the little screensaver up there and everything. But I
look it up real quick here. Let's see. PS3, start.
But the PS1, I could just eat that all day.
Sound. Here you go. Let's hear what that PS3 sounded like. Okay. Here's the startup screen. Whoops. So far, nothing. Oh, here we go. This is pre 3.0. Yes. Okay. So in my head, that was PS2. Now, the Slim and anything 3.0 or higher on that update sounded like this on the PS3. Listen to this. A little deeper, so a little darker, a little subtle, but you know.
Yeah.
PS2.
I liked it. I really hated I didn't really care for the PS4 layout. I still don't like it.
I don't love it either. Five's a lot better, but I'm with you. Yeah. I think the PS4 was a bit of a step back. I also think the Xbox One interface sucks. Right. I really liked the 360.
I hated Blades. Who hated Blades?
I liked Blades. Blades were okay.
Blades.
360 Blades. Oh man.
Yeah, that is such a man. It just nothing been more controversial as far as the user interface goes than those Blades and not Blades. It's like I love Blades. I hate Blades.
I hate Blades. Everyone loves and hates everything. Okay, here's your PS2 startup sound just for comparison. Oh, that's right. And then they had those little fireworky things that would get more of them. The more, not achievements you did, but the more like high scores you got or something.
I have never owned a PlayStation 2, nor have I ever had a friend who had a PlayStation 2.
How is this possible? It is the highest selling console in the history of the planet. Yeah. The only thing close to it is like DSs, I think, are real close, but it's like 150 or 200 million or something. Some ridiculous number.
Andrew, my oldest son, had one.
Yeah.
And he had it in his room. And I never played it once. Never, not even once.
Nope. That's crazy to me. Crazy to me.
I've never. It's on my list. It's one of the next things I'm getting. I had sent out a message earlier on Facebook Marketplace. So it was somebody who had a GameCube Silver and a PS2. And I am trying to acquire that because I want to do a mod on my GameCube, and I want to mess around with the PS2. But back here, I got my soldering station. I got my Father's Day stuff early, and it's got all kinds of cool soldering stuff on it. I can't wait to do some videos.
Look at you, hacker-oony. Oh, by the way, this is a note from Maddie up in Canada. Look what I got. I'm wearing the shirt he sent me. He got me a
that is awesome
Dragon's Lair t-shirt, and I freaking love it.
I love it. Yep. That is a sweet shirt, man.
It fits good, too, which is, you know, rare for me. I usually am a little misshapen in my shirt, so this fits all right.
Yeah, and usually your nipples get chafed really easy. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You should see them now. They're fully erect. PS4 welcome screen, just for fun. Listen to this.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah, I like it. It's comfortable.
Yeah, it's very comfortable. It's very comfortable.
I've determined it. Since you've played all of them now, I got to say, PlayStation 1, by far, my favorite startup.
Let me play. Let me give you the PS5 starter, okay?
It's a non-starter for me.
Here we go. Check it out. Here's PS5. The newest. Here we go. No, this is... That isn't it. Sorry, I don't know why that's in there. Here it is. Okay. Oh, this isn't it. Oh, there we go. Oh, see, that's nice. You like that?
Yeah, if like I'm about to watch a don't take drugs at work
what?
Thing. That's what it sounds like. It sounds like the intro is some kind of, this is a safety video. Give me that safety video music again. Give it to me. Tell us what it is.
I don't know what it is. I don't know what safety music is. Oh, that made me laugh.
If anybody has a day job, they know what I'm talking about. If you work somewhere that's in an office, you've heard that stupid, crappy sound.
I guess I haven't been in an office in a long time. Well, anyway, so you got your thing. Now, this game launched on September 9th in 1995. We're going to focus on the U.S. launch. That's the U.S. launch.
Right, North America launch. That's right.
And the lineup of games went like this. And I'll tell you which ones I owned after I read the list. Battle Arena Toshinden, number one, or first game. There was a two, but that was later. ESPN right. Extreme Games.
Extreme.
Killeek, the DNA Imperative. If you think it's that's imperative. A dumb title, you should hear some of the dialogue. I'll get to that in a minute. Oh, you know what? Boy, in fact, I'm going to do it as I go. All right. So Battle Arena Toshinden, one of my favorite things about it isn't how it plays, because I actually think it's kind of a shitty game. However, I had this amazing thing at the beginning. Check this out.
Eight traveling fighters brought together by a common destiny now meet at the Battle Arena Toshinden. Many years have passed since this tournament, known only to those in the underworld, was last held.
What?
Some fighters have come for personal glory. Others have come to fight for those they love. But all will do their best to be victorious in this tournament, which will decide their fortunes.
It's an awesome voiceover.
I love it. And there's like it's this, really good. It's like scrolling text over this amazing, just red, like a sun, warm
like a hot sun, or like what was the blood moon looking, but it was like a sun. It's cool.
Yeah.
It's very cool.
Yeah, it's very cool. Oh my God. It's worth firing that up through emulation, if nothing else, just to watch that. Now, Scott says it didn't hold up. I played Battle Arena Toshinden before on my Sega Saturn, but it was the remix version, so it's a little bit different, but it's pretty much the same. And this is supposed to be a virtual fighter killer, right?
Yeah.
That's what the Saturn had. So
and it was poo.
Okay, so the game. So you got to play weapons this time. So you know, most of the fighters, you know, you just had fist, and you had some kind of magical casting spell or some kind of magic fire fist. But this lets you use weapons from swords to big club and different thing. But one of the things that I really appreciate about this game is they actually thought about the 3D aspect of it, because even though this is 3D rendered and it's you're still just fighting, and most of these games you're just going head to head, right? It's almost like a side beat 'em up. But in this one, you got to when you tried to dodge, you rolled. You rolled around in like a circle, and you could change positions, and it felt very three-dimensional. But how's the fighting, you ask? It's okay.
It's not great. And I mean, it looked really cool at the time. I remember it looked rad. I was like, oh man, look where fighting games are going. This is freaking beautiful.
So cool.
But man, the gameplay, everyone feels like they're made out of weird paper. They float funny. They animate bad. When you die, just looks wrong. This whole fall on your back.
I think the animations are okay. Yeah, but you're right. It doesn't handle very well. It does about the same on the Sega Saturn 2, by the way. And you end up getting falling off. I actually like the fact that you get knocked out of the ring.
That's
and
true.
You can knock your opponent out of the ring. That's also fun.
Yeah, that stuff's good. I like more interactive level stuff. Here's a little audio from it. So you get the idea. It's like, you know, it's a Japanese deal. I don't know what that means.
And I think this developer, this is the only thing they ever did. Released for in America, and I think, you know, like you said, I think they did they work on a Toshinden 2 or is it just remix? I'm not sure.
Toshinden 2 is definitely an improvement in some ways and a step back in other ways. By then, I had kind of learned my lesson, and I'm like, I'm not spending money on another Toshinden game.
Did you get this though, day one? I'm picking up.
I did because it was all the hype, man. Everybody wanted this game. Yeah. It was supposed to be the hottest thing ever.
And I will say one more thing real quick before we move on, but from Toshinden, I did play this past week. I emulated on the Mr. FPGA, and I used my PlayStation Mini controller. You can poo-poo on the PlayStation Mini all you want.
I sure can.
It does come with two pretty sweet USB controllers that are pretty much a really good faithful replication of the original one that launched, which has no dual sticks on it at all. It's just, you know, it's all digital D-pad, digital buttons. So not great for fighting games. And so it's really tough on the thumb, but
fighting games. That's the only way. I don't want to play fighting games with a freaking analog stick. F that. You want a D-pad.
No, I'm sorry. Yeah, but I want to say this is a true the way it's laid out is a true four direction pad.
Yeah.
So and you can kind of emulate some of the go down and back, go down and back to make a move.
Yeah.
You can kind of simulate a little bit, but since it is digital and you know it's not the great, but the Sega Saturn controller, which would have the Virtua Fighter on it. It has the D-pad that it rolls a little bit, right?
Yeah, it does have a little bit of a roll.
It rolls a little bit. So it feels a lot more comfortable. It doesn't hurt the thumb as much. So much better experience controller-wise for me playing this on the Sega Saturn.
Yeah, and Dice Tomato is correct. It really does depend on the fighting game. A game like Soul Calibur benefits greatly from an analog stick on the Dreamcast and other consoles. Certain other games like Mortal Kombat, I never want to even touch it unless it's a D-pad. I got to go D-pad. I just can't do it in the
other way. Gotta go D-pad. Look at the big chunk.
Yeah, the guy with the big stone. No, he sucked. What a sucky sucker. It's just so bad.
But there you go. That was one of the big releases.
It was a huge one. Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, we keep bringing up Soul Calibur a trillion times better. Virtua Fighter 1 and 2. Better games than this. Toshinden was a wannabe, and I didn't want it to be hard enough. So that's my take on that. Now let's talk about a game that, it sounds a little like this. That's menu selections there.
On your mark, get set, go!
All right. This sounds a little like Road Rash. Well, you wouldn't be... all that wrong.
You wouldn't be all that wrong, right?
No, you'd be close to correct, actually. The way this game works. So it's ESPN Extreme Games, which launched that day. This is another one that I grabbed at the time. And the point of this game, one of the things I liked about it is one of the first maps you get is you go to Utah and ride around in the desert. And for some reason, I just thought that was rad because, you know, I live here. So
Of course you did. It's like, oh, look, I get to go to Moab, right? Yeah. That's
basically that's it, deal. Yeah. So this is like some weird, the backgrounds are some weird combo of Moab, a fake Western that isn't real, and some other shit that's not real either. But anyway, it was unique in one weird way. It wasn't just... you know, everybody on the same vehicles. As you can see, those watching video, and I'll explain this for everybody at home, but there were people on bikes, rollerblades, street luges, so they're laying on their back. Yeah. I think there was a...
They're inline skates.
Inline skates, that's the other thing. I was inline thinking they're skateboards, but I guess not. I don't think they're
very,
skateboards.
Very, very 95 extreme sports gear.
Oh, yeah, big time. And that's what they were trying to create here. That you had obstacles and gates you could go through that would earn you money and points. You could kick and punch your opponents using the shoulder buttons whenever you get too close.
You should.
Yeah, you have to if you want to live.
If you want to win.
Yeah.
Right.
It's like they punch the guy if you want to live is what they said on Terminator, I think. Also, this level, which I'm watching right now, which again is the Utah level, the desert level, there's I don't know why they think we're just slam-packed with what do you call those rolling tumbleweeds?
They're kind of annoying too. I don't even know if they really even stop you, but they're annoying.
Yeah, and then boulders.
The boulders were terrible.
Big old boulders. If you got caught up in one of those boulders or the other thing, it totally screw you on the race. But essentially, it's a racing game.
They're getting launched like Wile E. Coyote is like trying to kill the Roadrunner or something while you're out there. It's insane.
It's incredibly the Bureau for Land Management needs to get involved and freaking clean up this mess. But anyway, this is a game that you could do with multiplayer split screen or by yourself. And I played the hell out of it. The one thing I didn't remember, and now I do after giving it a play yesterday, the graphics, character graphics and the bikes and all that stuff, these are not polygonal. These are pre-rendered sprites.
Sprites, right.
Yeah, that are then put on a sort of pseudo 3D background. I mean, it's a lot of flat images, so it's hard to call it. I don't know. This is not the best looking game is what I'm trying to say. It looks like mud.
Yeah, I'm sure it's taken a lot to render the upcoming 3D landscape and all the little things you got to go through and everything. So yes, it's fine with the 3D with the sprites. Yeah. I this game is really configurable. I was never played this back in the day, and now it's not even called ESPN. That contract ended, so now it's just called like one Extreme Sports and then two Extreme Sports because there's a part two. Yeah. And I never got to play this. But I really liked it, and I liked, upgrading through going through the little areas where you collect money, and then you would go in, you could buy a better bike or wherever. I usually rode the skateboard. Yes. Each one of them has their own advantages.
Yeah, they all have advantages. I thought the bike was pretty well represented, but I also did luge a couple of times and kind of liked it. It's a fun game.
You're gonna lose if you lose. If you use the lose, you're gonna lose.
Yeah, you're a
loser. That's how you remember that.
Yeah.
Because what you can do is you can go in and you can choose your whatever you want to ride on, and then you can also uncheck everything except for one type of vehicle. So that's what I did with the CPU. I turned them all into street losers, and I was a bicyclist, and I just rode through and kicked all of them. It was great.
Yeah.
And
like you want to do. I get it. Look at that password. This thing had passwords. It didn't even have saves to your damn memory cards. It was dumb. I shouldn't say it doesn't. It did, but it had a password option as if it was, 16-bit era or something. It's just weird.
And the reason why they did that is because they didn't pack it in with the PS1. So $299 sounds like a really hot, sexy deal, way less than the $399 for the Sega Saturn. But there's no packing game. Virtua Fighter came with the Sega Saturn. Yep. You didn't get no packing game. You got a demo disc with a few games on it, and you didn't get a memory card, and you're definitely going to need that memory card, or you're going to have to be remembering passwords like you're some kind of chump playing 16-bit games again.
Yeah. The important thing, though, is if you like Road Rash, you'll probably like this. Is it as good as Road Rash? No. Is it as good a music as Road Rash? No.
No.
Could Road Rash, would I, if somebody said today, hey Scott, what would you rather have revived, Road Rash or this? I'd say Road Rash. I don't like whatever.
Extreme Games is such a product of its time because that's what was on TV. You could actually watch Extreme Games, and it was this Gen X was doing all this, you only live once kind of sports.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. 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 And for those in the chat are like, wait, what's Road Rash? I can't believe someone's asking.
Get out of here, Disco Biscuit. Yeah. You're a kid, right?
That's really weird to hear that from anybody to say those words. But Road Rash is this amazing. I'll show a little video of it. This is the 3DO version, which I also owned. Oh, we got to do a 3DO show.
Yeah, that is a superior machine. A superior game, excuse me. That's a superior game right there to the ESPN.
Oh, yeah, this is a better game. I don't think, the frame rate's not much better, but the gameplay is just a better game. And Road Rash famously also paid big money for, music licensing. So this thing was, full of Soundgarden tracks, and it was great. It was a great game. Loved it.
Oh my, we definitely have to have a road rash. I've seen several people in the chat room say they haven't seen road rash. A lot of people saying, no, you misunderstood me. I have seen road rash. And then, so it's just going to have to be a road rash episode. We're going to have it.
Okay.
It's just a thing.
You know what? I'm in. Let's do it. Now let's talk about the next poopy game on the list. This is not, this is not one that I bought. Okay. So I cannot speak to it, but Kilik, the DNA imperative had this dialogue. Okay. This is indicative of a lot of this game and partly why I think it's problematic, because it is nonsense. But
you read the box art, you got home, and this is what you got.
This is what you heard.
August 16th, 2038. International Peacekeeping Force Headquarters, Auckland. Control picks up an urgent message from undercover agent Franco Fukuzawa at the South Pole Observation Base of the Giant Bifrost Group. The message reads, situation critical. Kim must be stopped. Repeat, Kim must be stopped. Hours later, a Liger assault chopper is speeding toward the South Base, carrying the IPKF's most elite polar operations team, White Lightning.
Okay, it's just nonsense.
White Lightning.
It's nonsense.
It's
the whole thing.
It is an 80s TV script for a 90s game is what it is. I mean, you might as well be playing, you know, something like, I don't know, Airwolf or something, because that's what it kind of feels like. At least that's what it is. That's what the pitch is. Once you actually play it, you realize, oh, this is just a corridor shooter, and I'm fighting drones instead of, you know.
Yeah, they kind of like mislead you, too, because in the intro, there's lots of helicopter and mech stuff and all this, and then eventually it's like, nope, you're walking through a corridor, and you're in a robot suit, but you're not really special. You're just
not very special at all. As a matter of fact, this is they only give you the video demo of this on the PlayStation Pix, which was packed in, which is just a few demos you can play. And if you had seen this, you would have thought you were getting one game, and then once you got it, you would have been like, yeah,
this isn't the game they promised.
I've been duped.
Major duped. So it's okay. It's fine.
It was okay.
Yeah.
I played it.
It was all right.
It was okay.
Yeah. I've played worse things. I'll just put that out there into the ether. It's not the worst game I've ever played. But I don't know. Nothing too remarkable here. I played it yesterday.
You're going down corridors. You're collecting keys so you can get to certain areas so you can destroy more drones. And you're just trying to get through the area.
Yeah. And
so,
none of this is going to make you go, oh, this was better than Doom, or, you know, not even close.
I spent $50 on this. Hot damn.
Look at that Photoshop work on that logo.
And I love the Kylik DNA imperative logo that comes up. And by the way, it is DNA imperative. And yes, there are sperm.
Yep.
There are sperm in the opening scene swimming around, implying that that's what's going to happen with the DNA modification.
If you guys wanted a launch PS1 title with sperm in it, this is the one.
Right. I mean, can you imagine that coming home? Your mom bought you the PS1, and you're like, cool, and you load this up, and then they got a bunch of sperm swimming around, and it's like your mom's going to be like, a nope.
Yep, you're right.
Nope.
And then this heinous pre-rendered 3D Studio 1.0 garbage. Oh, it's so bad. Like, I know we need to make babies. Everything's a step, right? It's all iterative. We got to get somewhere, and to do that, you got to have the awkward stage. This was the awkward stage.
And this developer, you know them from nothing, and they'll continue to know them from nothing.
Yeah, they're not. They got nothing to tell you. Now, as you can see, here's some extra gameplay going down a corridor. You know, they're going for a very claustrophobic sort of Doom kind of vibe, and you shoot stuff and things die, and it's okay.
It's drones mostly. They look kind of cool. The shootings, it controls okay. It's all right.
Yeah. Like I said, there are worse video games for you to spend your time on than Kilik.
I'd be pissed if I spent $50 on the first day. If this is the game I got, the only game I got.
Yeah, they didn't have returns like they have now. So you were kind of stuck for a thing. Although for a while there, Software Etc. did a thing that me and my buddy Andrew called the 30-day return policy. And what it was is they would give you 30 days to return a game. And so you could play the whole thing. You could beat it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then take it back. And we're like, sweet, because we didn't have any money. We're freaking broke. So we'd take it back, and then we'd get another one, and we'd do it again. They finally got
Blockbuster was renting games out at that time.
No, I know. We did that too. But but these guys got wise to it, and they changed it to 7 days. Well, they don't know me very well. I was like, I can beat that in seven days. So I would do
I'm
a lot of
this
that
challenge.
Too. Yeah. Otherwise, you were just that was the only way you could do anything. And nobody else was doing
that. What you would tell your friends? It's like, hey, you guys want to go take a 7-day challenge?
Yeah.
And sit down to the store and pick up a game and see if we can beat it in seven days.
That's how I beat, or what was it? Resident Evil 3, I think. Yeah. Nemesis.
Wasn't that the Blockbuster rental time frame when it like 3 to 5 days for the games? I'm trying to remember. I'm also trying to remember if I worked at Blockbuster just a few minutes before the PlayStation 1 launched. And I'm trying to, I remember us renting out NES carts and that kind of stuff, but sure. I don't remember much about the PlayStation era.
Oh, they definitely
I don't think
did.
They rented the consoles.
They definitely, well, I don't know about consoles because I never rented one, but I know they rented the games because we pick them up there all the time.
I remember renting the consoles because you could rent out the big old cases and everything. Mm-hmm. And it was expensive, too, because people would freak out. It's like, we need a security deposit. And it's like, what? You don't trust us? Like, no.
No, it's a console. No, we do not. We're not going
to
do that.
You can't even, you can't even rewind your tapes. I have to rewind them for you. No, get out of here.
I bought maybe it was for a friend's thing. Anyway, somebody one time for something rented a N64, even though I had one at home.
Yeah.
They rented it for a party. And I remember
couldn't you link those together? Was that ones you can link together?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe. We never did though. They just had it for one person. Or, they just had it for one rental. But it was like $60 for the weekend.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I said to the guy, I'm like, you know what? Another $60 to $120 and you've got the console. Don't go rent this again. This is dumb. Buy it.
Right.
Invest in it.
Right.
Get it.
Invest in it.
And then rent the game. So that's fine.
Yeah, he probably spent $60, but that was probably a security deposit part of that. He probably got some of that back. I think it was like 20-something or something like that to rent it, and then like $30 deposit or so. I can't remember. It was something like that.
I don't think the GameCube let you link them either. Wasn't Xbox felt like it was like
they're
the
confirming
first
in the chat room that you couldn't link the N64. Think you there's a network adapter for the GameCube, so I guess anything is possible. I don't know. That's a good question. We need to find out more about console connectivity.
That's
the place I'm lacking.
Xbox was great at it because they were kind of coming from the PC side and they knew this stuff. Having a little LAN was no big deal in their mind. All right, so there's that. It's Kaleek and it's poop. Then
and it's poop,
a game everybody loves, this one.
Showtime. Tonight's matchup, Cavaliers versus Blazers
are playing.
Here's the tip.
Here's the tip.
Robinson.
Robinson. Fantastic. Boom shakalaka.
Here's the tip.
All right. So you got your NBA Jam Championship Edition.
Tournament Edition, right?
Tournament. Sorry, not champion. Yep. Yeah. Tournament Edition. I'm thinking of been playing that Pac-Man game. And it's got a Championship Edition in it.
That's right.
But anyway.
That's right.
This was, hot off the heels of a very successful run in the arcades. And then the Genesis and SNES had good versions of the game. Mostly the SNES version was the best.
Whatever, I got the Genesis version. It's the best.
I did too, but I won't call it the best. I played both. my brother-in-law's SNES game version of this game was definitely sounded better. Let's put it that way. Probably.
Well, absolutely. And you can thank Sony for that. You can thank the father of the PlayStation for that sound in the SNES.
Oh, is that true? I didn't know that.
Yeah. He developed behind Sony's back. He developed Ken Kutaragi, the father of PlayStation, developed the sound chip for the SNES. That's how they got in bed together to begin with, Nintendo and Sony, when they almost made the Nintendo PlayStation. And so that's the reason why it sounds so good.
Gotcha. Well, it does sound good. And this game, even more so, had real crowd sounds, CD audio, all that stuff. But it was just more NBA Jam. There's nothing really special here. It's also one of the hardest versions of this game.
It
really hard.
Is.
Yeah, I don't know why.
So I'm going to talk about two games during this little when we're talking about the games, and two of them, in my opinion, were too damn hard for the difficulty settings. If you're going to at the arcade, I expect one kind of experience. When I go to the arcade, I expect to be, renting the equipment essentially, and the game master, he sets the difficulty level. He sets what the value is of the quarter. He sets all that stuff. I just go in and, I experience the best I can. At home, you give me options to adjust the difficulty level. The middle difficulty level should not be obscenely hard.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The default difficulty level should not be brutal. That should be when I slide the slider over to the right and I want a bad experience.
That's usually correct. So they didn't do that here. They made
I slid that thing all the way to the left. And just this is, you know, and it's not really how the difficulty thing slides. But anyway, all the way to the left, to the easiest possible setting. And I was still getting murdered. Not like, oh no, I'm a little bit behind. Yeah. No, I'm talking about the other team was on fire constantly. On fire, on fire. And yeah. I'm like, this is the easiest setting on this game. And I am just getting devastated. No, yeah. Fix your difficulty level game that is 27 years old.
Well, they did. And it's called NBA Jam. I forgot the name, but they made a version of
the NBA Jam Easy Edition.
Easy Edition. No, it's a game they made for the PS3 and 360. And I owned it on 360. So I was able to even play this recently. It runs fine on a Series X. And it's everything's improved. Graphics are improved. Crowds improved. Everything's better. It still looks actually really modern right now, even in by today's standards, even though
it's so much fun because they're all like, it's NBA players and you got, it looks like the players.
Yeah. Unlike this
big giant.
Have you seen the menu in this? Cause here, chat, look at this. These faces. Oh, man.
If you've never played NBA Jam, is an experience that you will never forget. You don't have to be a sports fan to play NBA Jam. As a matter of fact, it might help that you're not, but it's just the silliest, funnest, just outrageous game you'll ever play.
Plus, the faces are wrong. They're just wrong.
Their
trying.
Faces are fan. It's the faces are what makes it so good.
They're trying, but they don't get it. Well, anyway, my point is that version of the game, the newer-ish 10-year-old one version thing, got it right. It quit doing rubber banding. It quit doing all that sort of cheat AI stuff. Yeah. And it finally was a game to play. Now, if you're playing this version, Tournament Edition, on the PlayStation with a friend, you were fine because you were both in charge of the other team and there was no AI getting in there screwing with you. But if you're trying to play by yourself, freaking forget it. It sucked.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I did. I had always had a friend when I played this, and I didn't have friends very often with games I would play. But this game, I absolutely knew that it was no fun experience playing this single player, even back in the day. I knew that. And then playing it now, I was like, yeah, this is no better. Matter of fact, it's even harder than I remember.
Oh, yeah.
I was just like, this is impossible.
Yeah, it's a harder, it's a hard game. It's mostly, the problem is the rubber banding for me, especially toward the end of the game. They just start hitting everything and they make you miss everything. Right. And it's freaking frustrating. So
yeah, that is frustrating. But my biggest problem was just, in most of these modern games, like these two-on-two matches and more modern games, you kind of know when you've been switched over to the active player, right?
Right.
It seems obvious. Here, I was just constantly like going, wait a minute, my guy's not even on the screen right now. Who the hell am I controlling? I mean, it was just me just moving the stick around and watching what was happening, which was devastation.
Yeah, nobody wants that.
It wasn't good.
It's devastation.
It wasn't a good experience. It was not a good experience.
All right, coming up next, and if your sports fix didn't happen with NBA Jam Tournament Edition, maybe it happened with Power Serves Tennis, which has this audio.
Angela Santos to say.
All right, so Angela Santos. So now you're thinking, well, that doesn't sound too bad.
Feels very much like a golf game, but for tennis, right?
Yeah, but then you play it, and it's one of the worst games I've ever played in my life.
I hate it. It is the most stupid-ass game I've ever played.
It's really bad, you guys. I mean, the ball doesn't even make contact with the racket 90% of the time. They had a first-person mode, which blew goats. The more traditional mode, which we're looking at right here, which is the camera pulled back some, like you're
that's the only way you could even play this game.
Yeah, it's the only way to do it. But even then, the way you're hitting the ball, the way you're targeting, it's fruity. I don't like it. Never did.
Yeah, they're trying a bunch of this is like a tech demo to me because they didn't, there was no HUD. There's no, what's going on? Is the ball near me now? No, it was just all guesswork. The ball kind of comes near you. You kind of dive towards it. And the problem is there's no in-game instructions. So you have to read the manual. I couldn't find the manual anywhere online. Usually I can find a PDF manual. Everybody hates this game. I'm not scanning that stupid manual in. I'm not doing it.
No, nobody likes it. There's nobody. This reviewed bad, but at the time and now retro people don't care about it. It's poop. It's a poop game.
only to bash it. Is the only reason why you should care about it.
Yeah.
Is to go, oh my God, I can't believe this experience is so bad. Because when it starts, there's no, if you hit this button, the camera will change. They don't tell you that. They just start you and they're like all up your ass, sitting right on top of you, and you can't see anything. And you're trying to serve, and it's like, I don't even know what's going on. Yeah. I end up button mashing until I finally found out I could zoom out some and do these different screens. I was like, okay, at least I could do that. But this game wasn't even, you couldn't even play couples. It was, I think you could play two players on split screen.
Mm-hmm.
The multi-tap launched with the PS1. They don't even have that.
No.
They didn't even have that. Even that would have been fun at least.
Yeah. Yeah. When I bought four controllers at launch, I was so stupid. What was I doing? I don't know what I was doing.
I'm going to play every day.
Every day with all my friends. And I didn't.
Look, this is the deal. This is the deal. See, Scott has a little different perspective than some people because Scott grew up around arcade machines and he knew the cost, of, at least in general, of how expensive arcade games were and, you know, how much you had to invest into a gaming experience. You know, $2.99 and then throw on some controllers, which are probably $50 a piece. You know,
they were $29.
If you spend $500, but you get a butt ton of arcade ports in an era when you could make real arcade ports that looked like the real arcade.
Yeah, they were good. Like they were good ports. All of them were. I think even the Genesis and SNES era were great arcade era ports.
Right.
You know, I was talking before the show about Ms. Pac-Man, and two of my favorite versions are SNES and Genesis versions of those games.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So here's the thing with tennis games. There are a bunch of great tennis games in the history of tennis.
All named Mario.
I like the Mario games a lot, but I still say that the Virtua Tennis series, especially 2, Tennis 2K2, is one of the greatest tennis games still to this day ever made.
Okay. I think Tron is the best tennis game.
Mm-hmm. Tron is a tennis game with consequences.
Yeah.
That's one way of looking at it, for sure. Mario Tennis is great, though. Don't get me wrong. All right, then
I'm going to take it back. I'm going to say Pong is the greatest tennis game.
Oh, my Lord.
I know it's table tennis, but I think it still counts.
You're pandering to Big Pong.
To Big Pong.
Big Pong. All right, next up, you got a game called The Raiden Project. Hey, everybody, you want to play the Raiden arcade games? You want to play a pretty much pixel-perfect version of a bullet hell top-down shootery deal?
Yes, good I news. Do. I love shmups.
Listen to this. Oh, yeah. Guns and tanks and robots. You got your traditional top-down, you know, R-type looking. Well, R-type wasn't top-down, was it? It was side view. Whatever.
Right, right.
It's one of those.
You're not wrong in the fact that in this port, you could do a side view like an R-type.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, you totally could. And it's a fun one of those. It's not going to do. It's not going to blow your socks off or change the way you look at the world. But
I just agree. You get 1 and 2 in here. 2 is a little bit better as far as you know, the graphics and that type of stuff. But yeah, I mean, if you like a smup, you're going to love this one. And I love the crap out of it. And the port gave you an opportunity to do some things like turn the game sideways.
Mm-hmm.
But the only problem is when it turns sideways, so did the scoring and everything else. It's kind of annoying.
Yeah,
it did give me some a moment of levity when I did turn it sideways, and you get this warning message that for all of us dumb Americans who tried to turn our TV sideways to make up for the fact that we were turning it sideways, and you had to agree to it. You had to check on 2 different yes boxes saying that you weren't going to turn your TV sideways if you play this in sideways.
Yeah, if you think Eulas today are crummy, that's a terrible Eula. That's a real bad one.
It's like, why?
Yeah, that's no good at all. It's your TV. Do what you want with it.
I guess they think that we like to sue people here in the States, maybe?
We're a litigious bunch over here in the States.
We do like to sue. We like to sue.
So, anyway, shmup, you like that? You like bullet hell? Well, then this is your game. All right. And it was good. It's a good one of those. And I think this made it compete with, you know, the Neo Geo was famous for having kind of the best of these.
I think
this stood pretty good toe to toe with that stuff. So it's not a bad way to go if you had to buy a game that day. All right. Let's move on to Brian's favorite character of all time. This.
You want to know what's going on? Let me tell you the story of Rayman. In Rayman's world, nature and people live together in peace. The Great Protoon provides and maintains the harmony and balance in the world.
Yeah. How do you feel about that?
Everything, nothing has arms or legs. No thanks. I'm out.
Brian doesn't like Rayman. Look, their new Rayman, the newer Rayman games are really good.
I just don't like that he doesn't have arms or legs.
I like the new ones. I also don't like, I've never liked his character design. For the reasons you're saying, plus a couple others. I just don't think it's good. Big stupid nose, big dumb eyes. I just don't like it. However,
clunky hair.
Those newish ones, which were, I don't know, 2014, 2015, whatever it was.
Yeah.
Those are great games.
They're fantastic. This game, fantastic as well. I mean, I give Rayman shit, but I mean, honestly, it is a great side-scrolling platformer, and it's a lot of fun. And in fact, that you have to, like, you had just a little bit of Metroidvania. You got to get some power-ups. You got to work your way back through stuff. You can't get through certain areas. It's kind of a really great game, but not for a launch title for a primarily 3D console.
I'm just saying. They had to do some 2D stuff. The thing about this game, a Ubisoft creation, by the way, they did really cool environment stuff, but that's because they saved so much money on limbs. Because if you don't need to have arms, elbows, knees, legs, or in the neck, you're,
do you know how long it takes to render an elbow? It's insane.
2D elbow.
Yeah, it's insane. You don't want to do it. But yes, it's great. It's bright. It's colorful. I would have been totally happy if I had picked up Rayman for the PlayStation. If that had been the game that I picked, like, I probably would have picked maybe one or two. I wouldn't have bought more than two games.
Yeah,
because that would have put it about the same price as the Sega Saturn.
Yeah, I was in my 20s. I couldn't afford this shit. I had to go. I don't know why I bought that multi-tap or extra controllers, but I was broke that for the next 6 months.
Dreaming big. Dreaming big, baby.
Now, if you want to dream real big, dream about this.
3, 2, 1, go!
All right, that music may be familiar to some. It's Ridge Racer.
Yeah, it's a lot more familiar than that Daytona last week.
That made no sense to me. I still don't get it.
Somebody sent us a message and kind of fixed this on it, by the way, before we get talking about Ridge Racer. I had actually played Ridge Racer and guessed my game last week, and I had recorded some footage off of a YouTube channel, and I haven't played this game in forever.
Yeah.
And I just, I didn't think anything about the audio, and Scott guessed Daytona. Because it had the Daytona music in it. Sure enough, the guy had put Daytona music in so it was still Ridge Racer, sound effects.
Yeah.
But he was playing the Daytona music.
Yeah.
So that's not natural. Nope. And so I apologize. That was a trick one. I didn't even realize it. So.
Yeah, you got fiddled with that day. That's what happened.
Yeah, I got fiddled with that. But was it better than Daytona Ridge Racer, you think?
Maybe no, the original Ridge Racer is not better than Daytona. Now, you could convince me that later Ridge Racer games like R4 and others are maybe better than Daytona. There's more variety for sure than Daytona ever had, but I think Ridge Racer, that first Ridge Racer is rough.
Yeah, it's an arcade port. So once again, we saw a lot of, I did not realize how many of these games were arcade ports, because I kept thinking, first 10 titles have some, some fancy stuff, but I keep forgetting this is Sony's first time, entering the console market, and just, they kind of had a little experience over there with the Japanese, but you don't know what the American's going to do. What are they going to like? Are they going to like some Ridge Racer? I don't know.
Yeah.
They're probably not going to like Kalik. Whatever.
Let me ask you this.
Yes.
Could you not do third person in this car, or is that just the
guy? Yes, you can. You hit the triangle and you pop out and you do a third person. That's the only two modes you have.
Well, this guy who's straight racing this is just a dingus. I can't stand
I can't race inside. I hate to jump out.
I don't even like it in the where I can see the dash and wheel and everything. I need to be outside my effing car. I need to be floating behind it like by 5 feet above it. That's how you race in video games, okay?
Everybody knows that.
Everyone knows that. All right. I had that game, though. I bought it on day one.
You would have been very happy if you'd have got that one. I did enjoy all the little other references they had. If you saw any billboards and things that were in that game, it was
Galaga.
Nods to other stuff they were doing. Yeah, you could actually play at the loading screen. You could play Galaga, a little mini.
Yeah, in fact, listen to this. Did I capture it? No, hold on. I didn't capture it, but yes, you can actually play a little mini game while it's loading.
It's a Galaxian.
Galaxian.
I think I did say Galaga.
Yeah, Galaxian. You play. You can play it until it's done loading, but it kind of unceremoniously just quits. It's like pew pew pew, and then oh, you're done. Okay, let's go play.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. I was like, man, if you got that home Ridge Racer, you didn't read everything. You just popped it in. You load it up. And you're like, why am I playing Galax? What? Get the box back out. You're like, what is going on right now?
It's pretty weird. Very strange concept that they did that. All right. Now, the game I didn't buy, because why would you buy this? But apparently, this is better than it has any right to be. My friend had it, and it's rad. Here it is. It's Street Fighter, the movie, the game.
The movie, the game. That's right.
Here it is.
Street Fighter.
Bow, wow, fight.
Jean-Claude.
Yeah, so you see little Jean-Claude fighting Raul Julia here.
Yeah, Raul Julia, yep. We got Guile over here fighting Bison.
Guile and Bison having a little face-off. And this is a weird one because it's, you know, it's all mo-capped, kind of Mortal Kombat looking stuff, which was new for Capcom.
It was done in some form or fashion. I was meaning to do a deeper dive on this, but it was done with Acclaim, oddly, because you got the Acclaim logo and then the Capcom logo. So I don't know if they did the capture stuff for them, for the actors.
Probably did because they famously did all the mocap for all the Mortal Kombat stuff, so they probably did. I could be wrong on that, but you play these famous Street Fighter characters, but they were their movie versions, and it was all in this mocap mode. And it looked like shit, and it played pretty good. That's the weird thing about
it. Like a Street Fighter.
Yeah, it's a fun fighting game, and my friend had it, spent a bunch of time at his house, and I was like, oh, man, I should have got this instead of freaking Ridge Racer or whatever the hell I had.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't bad. Now, the movie is bad. The game with the movie imagery is bad, but the actual gameplay is all right.
Yeah, you don't have to play the movie mode. You can just go straight for the arcade mode where you just fight. Mm-hmm. Once again, this is the other game that I was like, if you're going to have a difficulty level, I love this anime. I love this GIF. This is such an animated GIF.
It's so bad.
She's doing it on the screen.
Yeah.
She's just talking, but it's just a loop over and over again. Anyway, yeah. It's fantastic. If you go back and watch the video later, if you're just listening, Street Fighter, the movie. If you're going to have a difficulty level slider on your game, hey, how about normal is normal and not brutal?
Yeah.
Because once again, I was, you know, okay, when I play a fighting game, this is what I expect. It's best 2 out of 3, right? So whenever I start on that first one, I always think, is that my warm up? Okay, so we're going to stage through this thing. We got 3 rounds potentially. Here we go. I fight the first round. I should be able to pretty much win with punches and kicks, right? Because those are fast. Mm-hmm. And I should be able to pretty much win that first round because I'm just warming up. Just going to do some punches, some quick punches and stuff. Nobody should be first level, be able to defend that much, very much. Okay, so fine.
Yeah.
The second round, he's probably going to kick my ass because he's going to start pulling out special moves. And so, you know, that's fine. But then the third round, I should be able to beat him again and move on to the next because I'm warmed up, right? I've warmed up.
Yeah.
Not here. first round. Dead. Second round, even deader, because then he starts using the special moves. Mm. And I'm like, how is this normal?
I feel like you might struggle with all fighting games then, because they all do what you're describing. They all kind of...
No, they don't. All the games that I know of, all the fighters, the Mortal Kombat, that's how I played Mortal Kombat for years. The first time, you can pretty much beat anybody. The first round, you can pretty much beat anybody with just some punches and kicks. You just spam the kicks, you duck, it's all you do.
Yeah.
And then you get your ass kicked the second round. And then third round, you're probably going to win, maybe, might lose.
Yeah. Well,
that's the agreement we have with fighters.
Never fight the AI, only fight friends. That's my answer to that.
Right. And then the second stage, when you play the next player, you know, all bets are off. You might get anything. Yeah. But that first one's a warm-up round. Tell me I'm wrong, people. Tell me I'm wrong.
Tell him
you know it's true.
Tell him he's wrong. Send that email in. Let's get him. let's get him all cleared up. All right, your final game of that launch window is a game called Total Eclipse Turbo.
Yeah,
I don't even remember this game. This is the one
Most
I don't remember.
Don't.
Okay, this is like completely out of sight, out of mind. Here's a little audio.
Commander, we've got Bogey from Alpha Sector coming in fast. Starbase Bravo to vessels bearing 150 Mark 29er. You've entered restricted space. Withdraw immediately. Commander, we're detecting an energy surge. They're charging weapons.
Ensign, notify the Stellar Command that we're under attack and get Gamma Squadron off the deck pronto.
Pronto. Get it done pronto.
I like that word salad of nonsense.
Yeah, total nonsense. Very bad pre-rendered imagery, just ugly this game.
Yeah. So if you want a visual of how this looks, kind of imagine like Star Fox, because it is, you know, you're kind of locked in. You can't go but so far left or right. You can't go so far up and down. And
you're, it's on rails. Flying, yeah.
Yeah, it's on rails. You're flying through some, you know, some caverns. But then it goes from cavern outside kind of stuff like you can see in Star Fox. And then it suddenly it pops into, if you ever played the Star Wars vector game, remember that one?
Yeah, Star Wars, or you're like down in the trench and it's all wireframe. Yeah. It's just like
that. And so that's kind of how it is. You fly down into this, I mean, you're flying along and you got to nosedive down into this beam area. And then suddenly you're in this tunnel and you're basically trying, you're trying to kill womp rats. That's what you're trying to do.
Yeah, basically. I mean, it does. Your comparisons are the right ones. It's an on-rail shooter, a lot like old Star Fox stuff. And you don't have any movement outside of left and right. So there's you can't like turn really. I mean, I don't know. It's weird.
No, there's a little bit. It's more like you just kind of like, oh, I'm leaning left and leaning right. But then you also outside, you have a roll, which it's not the easiest thing to do. This guy here, he sucks worse than me. I bet he has a really hard time with fighters. Yeah. and also you're fighting against these Tron looking things. Like, remember the big Tron?
The Tron ships.
Where the little. What are these things called?
With the legs, the big leg.
The Tron ships that like arches or something. Yeah, coming towards you.
I used to love those. I thought it was so rad.
That was so rad. Yeah. But you can do some barrel rolls here when you're outside. Once you get in the tunnel, no barrel rolls.
Does anyone yell, do a barrel roll? Does that happen?
Nobody. Okay. There's no, there's no frogs or anything. There's co-pilots or anything. There's nothing like that. It's just you. No clever dialogue or nothing. Just... It's not a great game, but,
Crystal Dynamics made it. Crystal Dynamics was making cool games then. They were working on Tomb Raider at the time. They had this. They had...
No, it wasn't. Not Gex. Was it Gex?
Gex might have been Gex, the lizard thing.
Yeah.
They'd do Soul Reaver and the Legacy of Kain game, which I loved that game. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Legacy of Kain, like I said,
it's okay, but I would be disappointed if this was the only game I had, because it's fun. I would be glad to get a demo of this, which I think you did. I think this is one of the barrel.
Yeah.
I think this is one of the playable demos that was on the PlayStation pack-in that came when you got the PlayStation originally. So.
Yes. That may be true, and I just even avoided it there. Like
You probably did. You're like, what is this stupid crap?
Generic and so like, ugh, and it looks like shit. Look at this lumpy-looking thing.
Like I said, it's fine, but it's not... It's not the first game you want. I mean, maybe you rent it, and you're like, okay, that's fine. I learned my lesson.
We were about to do some rad stuff on PlayStation, and that I think there's an important place I can start mentioning this. This is all obviously before amazing titles like the Wipeout series, which in my mind is almost the mascot of my time with the PlayStation 1. I can't speak for everybody, but Wipeout 1 and Wipeout XL. Those two games did two things for me. They defined this kind of dystopic, futuristic sort of racing sport idea, which I just never really seen before. So to me, that was just like new. And they became just Zen-like games for me. I could just play them all day. I love them. The music those games introduced me to has still never left me. I listen to that stuff all the time. To this day, I listen to Cold Storage, who is it's the name of the guy. It's his fake name, but the name of the guy who made the music for the original Wipeout 1.
Right.
He's got a great compilation called Slipstream, and it's basically all the original remastered tracks from Wipeout 1 and his tracks he did for XL. But that stuff was so freaking so informative for me, and so like made me change actual tastes in what I thought was cool about science fiction and electronic music, and it was that kind of that early 90s mid 90s explosion of electronic music coming out of nowhere, and you're about to see other bands like Left Field and you know, Crystal Method's only a couple years away. And man, it just informed so much of the 90s for me.
It really did. It was it wasn't long. I mean, it didn't take long. It did not release day one, but I think that's probably somewhat because of localization. They already relaunched it in Japan, mm-hmm. and the UK, or they got it like on launch. I think that was one of the big launch titles there. But I think there was some music issues, maybe some localization issues that was kind of make it lag behind. It was already a demo on the PlayStation Pix, so you might have had a chance to.
That's where I first saw it, and I remember playing that and going, "Oh, I'll be playing this."
Yeah, that was the game. I was I'm with you because that really showcased how awesome the PlayStation could be, and it was so smooth. Unlike Ridge Racer, which was arcade port, it kind of handled it like an arcade port, and it wasn't great using a D-pad, but it was okay. This felt good. It just
Chap mentions that the game Redout is a very good version of this. 100% correct. Okay. I own Redout. In fact, it was free on Epic a couple of maybe a month ago. But they basically have made a clone, not a clone. It's not like straight up ripoff, but they've made a Wipeout like game that is, I think, worthy of people's time. If you miss Wipeout games and you play the Omega Collection, which Sony still sells, it's very good. But if you played that to death and want something new, check out Redout.
Ooh,
on good Steam tip. And everywhere else. It's all over the place. That art is bad, though.
There was one more that was worth mentioning. It was Jumping Flash. It was also on the PlayStation Pix. It was a demo. I think they had high hopes for that, but I don't think it was well-received.
I loved that game when it came out. I've never
seen it before.
Me and my buddy Andrew played it. It was... I think I own it on PSN somehow, or I did on the PlayStation 3, but I'm not sure that stuff moves forward.
What do you like? You're like a rabbit?
Yeah, you're like a robot rabbit, and you jump real high. The main thing is just huge heights, and you got to solve these puzzles, and I don't know that it holds up now, but in the day, that seemed like a really innovative title.
It shocked me how much it looked like Minecraft.
It's
kind of weird.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that. It's a weird...
doesn't play like Minecraft, but it kind of has this visual look that kind of...
Here you go, chat. I'll show you a little bit of this. It's like... I don't know what to compare it to. Gameplay-wise, they were going for... I mean, it's definitely like a platformer, and the controls are super limiting in a weird way. Like, I remember it just being really stiff and kind of frustrating in some ways. But it just... To me, it represented one of the first attempts in 3D open world... concepts of like, I've got this place and I've got to solve all the things about it. I can't just solve the one. There's not just one thing to do, or I don't just move linearly through a level. I have to go do kind of open world things. Nobody else was doing that yet. Mm-mm. Like this is new territory, and I thought it was pretty neat at the time.
Yeah, it was pretty neat. Like I had never heard of it, never seen it.
Yeah.
Now it's cool. You may be asking yourself, sure, that was the first 10 in 95. What were the last 10? I'm not going to go over all of them, but just quickly, 2006 was the last release, official release, Strider Hyrule. I believe that's how you say it.
Strider game. Wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Strider game. And it was actually a port. So I think that's kind of a cheat for it being the last. The last developed was Jet Ace, another one of those fighter games up in the air.
Yeah.
Because it's a jet and you're ace.
Jet Ace.
November the 15th, 2004. So that would literally be... almost 10 years after the Japanese release.
That's crazy. Oh, here it is. It's like Afterburner.
Yeah, it's like Afterburner, kind of.
Actually, looks all right.
Those all those air combat games, that's what it is, essentially.
Yeah.
But look, I mean, it's not the greatest rendering. It's a 480. That video is like 480 or something, so it's not great. If you're emulating it, it looks really good, and it really speaks to how much power was in that PlayStation 1 that could be harnessed, because it's a far cry from
everything. That's what you would find with any console. Well, I mean, it's still true today. On dedicated hardware, the stuff later is always better because they figure out a way to harness it. And in Sony's case, that was especially true because they were always doing weird stuff with chip architecture. They were never like standard. Mm-hmm. So when they had their PS2 emotion engine, I poop my pants. you may as well. I mean, that's like the reincarnation of blast processing. It's so stupid.
Right.
But they were notoriously hard to develop for, three in particular, PS3. you know, the 360, which was based on the PowerPC platform at the time, wasn't like super simple to develop for, but easier than that PlayStation 3 architecture. Now that they're all x86 stuff and it's just, you know, they're basically high-end PCs, or depending on how you look at it, they're mid-range now. They a lot easier to dev for and also to port for, because you want to make one version for this one and one version for that one. You don't have to go too crazy with it. But it was a lot more pronounced back then when you could tell the difference between like a launch title like ESPN Extreme Games, ESPN rather, and then something like, you know, this Jet Ace, which actually looks like a legit high res, high frame rate, not a lot of pop in kind of real video game. I don't know. It's a weird process how that stuff works.
So, Scott, I want to know something.
Yeah.
In September, leading up to the launch of the PlayStation, you may have been getting some gaming magazines, and maybe you got Video Games, the Ultimate Gaming Magazine, issue 80 from September 1995, right before the launch. Did you get those gaming magazines?
No, but I had Next Generation, and they had a big, their whole launch thing was a big PlayStation thing, I think.
So if you pop down there, I don't know the little where we put little stories and stuff we put down there. Yeah. There's a link says check out this wet dream of an ad, and I'd like to just either you can read it or I can read it.
Here I'm going to put it up. I find it fascinating. I'll put it up and let you read it. Hold on. Okay, it's up. Read.
Right. So we're looking at Toshinden. Right. We're looking at Battle Arena Toshinden.
Yeah.
And we've got one of the characters kicking another character's ass. Right. And here's the ad. It says, it's actually a role-playing game. Today, you'll be playing the part of the piñata. It continues. Across the room, a gorgeous blonde in skin-tight leather beckons for you. It is the start of a wet dream? No. It's a beating by Sophia, Battle Arena Toshinden's Queen of Pain. The Sony PlayStation, in quotes, is the only place where multiple camera angles, 360-degree movement, and epic 3D graphics add up to some of the most memorable massacres ever. Save your quarters and look for Battle Arena Toshinden and 50 other titles, including Mortal Kombat 3 on the PlayStation before Christmas. And they kept that promise. They did have around 50 games by Christmas.
MK3 so was a very good port on the end of the year, by the way.
Right.
That MK3 version was the best one to get. It was really good.
But I like the fact that they're asking you to ask, is it the start of a wet dream? No.
The answer is no.
It's a beating by Sophia.
Yeah. The answer is no.
Sold.
Next Generation Magazine had a whole thing about, what, remember that crash and burn? Oh, what was that called? It was a next gen. It was a PS1 game, and it was super hyped ahead of release. And it was a car crash. What do you call that? Derby.
Oh yeah, derby. Yeah, Demolition that was derby. Actually on the PlayStation Picks. It was the Destruction Derby or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, something like that. And I remember everybody just losing their minds about that. Like that was going to be the end all, be all, destructive, 3D, blah blah blah. Have you seen that thing lately?
It's not good,
man.
It's not good. It's not great.
It's so bad.
And actually, they have. I'm wrong. I remember now because I loaded up because I was pretty excited. I do like derby games. I like smashing and crashing. That's a lot of fun. They had a. I think they had just videos for Twisted Metal and Destruction Derby on the PlayStation Pick that came with the pack in, and it was. It was terrible. It was.
It's got problems.
It wasn't no good.
Yeah, it's got. I mean, the potential is obviously huge. For the time, but and I don't want to diminish, you know, what it meant to be a next generation product, but it's a bummer. You know what, if you want to play something modern that's really rad and does exactly what the dream was here, it's a game called Wreckfest is fantastic.
Oh yeah, Wreckfest is great.
Yeah, it's really a lot of people really
love that. It's a that's a great recommendation. Twisted Metal, too bad we didn't see Twisted Metal right out of the gate. I was really hoping that would
love Twisted Metal, list,
but it wasn't.
Twisted Metal 1 took me by surprise.
But by Christmas, it was here.
Me and my friends played so much Twisted Metal 1 in particular that I just thought I was going to hate it after a while because we played it so much. But I ended up loving it. I loved Black. Black was amazing on PS2. There haven't really been a proper one since like the Vita game, I think, for a while.
Right.
So the rumor is they're working on a TV show around Twisted Metal, which may or may not be garbage. Yes. But the point is that I think they're going to coincide that with an actual new game. And I think Sony has been just sitting. It's like having money on the table. All of this people freaking out about making the next Battle Royale game. You need it to be Twisted Metal. It needs to be 100 cars enter. One lives. That's it.
And if you if you don't steep it like Stranger Things in the 90s culture, you're really doing a disservice to yourself. I think Twisted Metal lives in the 90s, always will live in the 90s, and to me was one of the launch titles, even though it's not listed here. It was pretty quick, though. I mean, it wasn't very much. You didn't have to wait very long to be able to get Twisted Metal.
I loved it so much.
It might have been the next month or weeks. It was very soon.
The amount of time I spent playing Twisted Metal is embarrassing.
Right.
Because I loved it so much. Car Combat. It was new. Nobody had done it before. It was this brand new concept. And it looks like garbage now. I mean, visually. But, man, just the control and the sense of, like, I'm driving around shooting missiles at people. That's great.
Right. That's great. How does this work? I don't know. I've got some kind of weird Green Hornet car with, missiles flying out of the front of it, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I like the cop car. That was fun. He had a taser. I used to think tasers were cool.
Don't tase my car, bro.
Yeah, don't tase my car. All right. Well, that basically lays it out for you. It was a weird launch, but one that led to a very, very successful run for the console. Certainly PS2 then broke all records and still has the title for most consoles ever sold.
And reminder, Brian never owned one. What is wrong with me?
Switch is number two now, though, I think.
I think you're right.
Yeah, the Switch is doing real good. Nothing wrong with that damn Switch, I'll tell you that. All right, Brian.
It does okay.
We did a good deed today. Now it's time to play this game right here.
Destroy it.
Yeah, that's right. It's called Guess Our Game.
Guess Our Game.
Our Game. Well, first you're going to try to guess my game, and then I'm going to try to guess your game. And these games are coming to us today in audio format only, so we have to try to guess what these were. Here's my hint to you. 1993, and it's a port from something else. I just want that to be clear. It's a port.
Is it Choplifter?
It's not Choplifter. I'll tell you that already, right ahead of all this. No Choplifter involved, okay?
And what was the year again?
Here's 93.
93, okay.
Yep, here's the clip.
So which one is it?
Yeah, that's the question. This is the hard part. You can't.
93. It definitely doesn't sound like regular Pac-Man. I mean, it sounds modified. It's like, is this on the Museum Plus?
No, it is not.
Okay.
Which, may sound easy or whatever, but there's a lot that are not included.
Yeah, there's a whole lot.
Yeah.
It sounds babyish, like...
Like Baby like, Pac-Man?
But they didn't call it Baby Pac-Man, right? It was,
yeah, they did. They had one called Baby Pac-Man.
Okay. I thought they called it... Was it Super Pac-Man or Pac...
No, they got a Super Pac-Man, but Baby Pac-Man was a whole...
Pac-Man Jr. What was it called?
Baby Pac-Man was the video game combined with a pinball machine. Do you remember that?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's right.
This may or may not be that. I don't know.
I'm glad. Okay. Then it's that.
All right. If that is your final answer, I will tell you that you are incorrect. The answer is is Miss Pac-Man.
I almost said Miss Pac-Man because you've been talking about it. And I was like, yeah, it's really Miss Pac-Man, but it sounded a little bit.
This is the
you knew that we're going for a more feminine or youth.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
They increased the pitch.
They did. So and in this port especially, this is the NES port of the game, which is 10 years after the original game came out. So this is a long time after.
That's the reason why I was thinking it wouldn't be Miss Pac-Man, because I was thinking the arcade. But you did say port. Yeah. You did say port.
I did say port.
I forgot. Yeah. I apologize. Yes, you're right.
Absolutely a port. All right. Now, I'm going to play yours. What's my hint? What do I get?
1985, and I want to give a thanks to Paul for recommending this, and I've been trying to guess that to remember what it was. I recorded it like almost a week ago now. I did it like after.
Everyone take a shot if you had on your bingo card that Brian would forget what his game was that I'm trying to guess.
I got it.
What do you got? Oh, yeah, you don't have to tell me. Yeah, don't tell me. Yeah. All right, here we go.
Yeah, thank you, Paul, for this recommendation. I thought it was fantastic.
I love it, but I don't know what this is. Let's see. platformer of some sort?
Yeah, yeah, yes, and it was on the Commodore 64, if that helps.
It's not Hard Hat Mac.
It's not like, yeah, it's not like a, it's, yeah. It's not like a hardcore, it's not like a, it is a platformer, but it's not like.
Is it a hard, is it a trans, is it a port from something else, like an arcade game or something like that?
That's a good question. All I know it from is from the 64.
Or give me another, give me a hint.
Composer is Rob Hubbard. No,
wow. L. Ron Hubbard. Got it.
Right, L. Ron. Gremlin Interactive was the developers. It is a puzzle platformer. How about that?
Puzzle
Released
platformer.
In 1985. I don't think this is a port of anything, other, unless it was for the Amstrad CPC, which it was also for.
It's not like Load Runner or something. Or a version of Load Runner.
No. No.
Platform puzzler? What, like, yeah. Like
he's, I think he's a frog.
Is it?
I think the character's a frog. I think. I can't say for sure.
I think he might be a frog.
I think he might be a frog. I'm not 100% sure on that, so.
I give up. I don't know.
This is Thing on a Spring.
Thing on a Spring?
Yeah, the Wraith knew it like two
I've
notes
never
in.
Heard of this. What is this? This sounds impossible to know.
The Wraith says it's a thing, not a frog. Well, he's got flipper feet like a frog and a head like a frog. He's like the opposite of he looks like the opposite of Rayman. He like
so what is this like
a
is it
center?
Is it like a Frogger clone or something, or what's the deal?
No, it's like a side scrolling platformer, a lot more vertical stuff though, and
Look at this. This is wild.
Yeah. Well, Commodore 64.
This is Commodore.
I'll tell you, the music is punching way above its weight class.
Oh, I agree. Yeah.
Its sound effects are punching way above the graphics.
I tend to agree. I don't really know what's happening, though. I think he's...
Yeah.
There's a spray can that's always spraying, and the whole place is just... This is the weirdest game. I've never played this. I've never even heard of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I had a Commodore 64. Great. Or my parents did. My dad had a Commodore 64, I should say. But I never.
Yeah, I love my Commodore 64 and my VIC-20.
I don't remember this at all. He does look like a frog. He's like a frog with a spring body.
Yeah, I want to see if I actually looked earlier. I think, did I find a cassette version of this? Because that's what I want to do. If I'm going to get another Commodore 64, I've got to get the cassette drive.
Yeah.
If I'm going to do it, I've got to do it right.
Because I know you, and you won't do anything less. I just know it.
Yeah.
Which is fine, Brian. You should be you and do the thing you do. But this is a whack game. I'm probably never going to play this.
Yeah, I want to get me a 1530.
Yeah.
Or I guess I had a 1531 tape for I think they're called data sets or something like that for the Commodore 64.
Oh, is that what they called it? I don't remember.
Yeah. Did you ever have a tape drive?
I did have the tape drive, system? And I also had one for the Apple II my dad had.
And when I say tape drive, I don't mean like a tape like you think of when you think of like, just, I'm talking a cassette tape.
Yeah, it's like freaking cassettes is what they were.
Yeah. And you stick it in a regular cassette player and it would go.
Oh, yeah, dude. Old school. Really old school. Yeah. Like. I was maybe 8 years old when I first saw one of those or something. Yeah. Super long time
Fantastic.
Ago.
Fantastic.
Well, all right.
Look at that motocross.
There you have. Well done. Neither of us won.
You got stumped. We both got stumped.
Yeah.
Thanks,
yeah.
Paul.
Which is totally fine.
Welcome to the treasure room.
Time for the treasure room. That is emails from you fine folks at home. PlayRetroShow@gmail.com is the email address. We got two of them today that I'm going to read. One is from Tom Norris in Norfolk, Virginia, who says, "Hey, Scott and Brian, just finished episode 18 about Dragon's Lair. Whee, look at my shirt.
Look at that shirt.
Another great episode. I was a little disappointed y'all didn't mention one of my favorites, Atari's 1983 Laserdisc game based on the Clint Eastwood movie Firefox. It's a first-person aerial combat game where you fight against an experimental futuristic Soviet fighter jet. Oh, I've seen the movie. I know the plot, nerd man.
I know the plot all too well. And we did sack that film. If you ever listened to our other podcast, Film Sack, Yes, we did Firefox.
We absolutely did, and it was great. Yeah, I believe most of the Laserdisc is used to show the background shots of the sky as you fight the fighter jets. It was also 50 cents to play, and we played it at our neighborhood 7-Eleven. It was, I was delivering newspapers at the time, and all the paper boys would meet there after we finished our routes to see who had gotten the highest score. Whoever had the high score got a free big gulp from the rest of the guys. Such a good time. Firefox would be a great movie for FilmSack too. We've done it. We did it.
God, that's such a great story. I'm just sitting here imagining, like, I just want to peek. I want to see what a gaggle, what do you call a gaggle of paper boys who gather.
Yeah, what's a group of paper boys? What are we going to call that?
What is it? Some newsies? Is that right?
Don't call them newsies. A newsies of paper boys there.
A newsies of paper boys. And that's fascinating. I find that's fantastic.
That's great. I love it. Those kind of stories are the ones I love, man. Everybody has their tie to this nostalgic kind of old gamey culture stuff, and that's a great one. Love it.
And I actually did take a look at that particular game for the Laserdisc episode, and I just couldn't squeeze it in. It was but it was on my list. I think it's sprites in the, you know, that you're controlling the plane is a sprite essentially, and
yeah,
everything
the backgrounds
the background
were
being,
yeah. So it wasn't quite the same. You were basically, it was more of a traditional video game that had a unique way of putting background imagery up, really.
Right.
So that's all that was. I do remember that game. The Wraith in the chat says that it should be a bundle of newspaper boys or whatever.
Guys.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I like that. All right, here's your final email for the week. Dan wrote in, says the NES had a game that didn't get the love it deserved and it's for its creative concept. It's called A Boy and His Blob.
Yes.
You travel around fighting aliens with your own pet alien blob that morphs into various tools/weapons depending on what flavor of jelly beans you feed it. For example, a cinnamon jelly bean turns it into a blowtorch, while a bubble gum jelly bean turns it into a trampoline, or a root beer turns it into a bottle rocket. It was a simple side-scroller, fairly easy in difficulty. It could have been developed into a good series with all sorts of upgrades since you can add all sorts of candy morphs. Check it out and see what you think. It sounds a little like I can't think of his name all of a sudden. Kirby. It sounds like Kirby? A Kirby game.
Kirby. Yeah. A Boy and His Blob, though, I thought there was like a remake of that because I had never heard of it before until I want to say when we were doing a podcast, me and Scott, years ago, called The Final Score.
Yeah.
And I want to say that Nicole had recommended this to us. And I think it was on Steam or something at the time.
She might have. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yes, it's 2016. So it looks like when it launched back there on, so I guess, is that just a relaunch of it? Publisher.
Well, here's 89. This thing came out.
So I'm assuming Threatened by, but yeah, I purchased on Steam from 2016, I think, and it's A Boy and His Blob. Oh, it's a classic reimagined.
Wow.
Yeah.
Look at this. Looks all right. It's creative.
But I want to play the original though now. Yeah, you said it was the NES?
Yeah, NES is where this was. Yeah. According to what I'm saying here, there may have been other versions, but it's kind of ugly, but I don't care. I'll play this.
I like it. I like it. It's kind of like got a Pitfall feel to it almost.
Yeah, a little bit.
What is that all about?
Maybe a little bit of Prince of Persia, original Prince of Persia kind of business.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, he's feeding the blob jelly beans now. Yep. Oh, and he turned him into a bridge.
Turned him into a bridge, yep. Look, you solve all kinds of problems. Oh, shit. He just fell. Okay, there he is. Boy, that's a weird game. I need to check more of that out. I don't remember this at all. But yeah, that sounds good. A Boy and His Blob, which is a little like A Boy and His Dog, which was a movie at the time.
Yeah. About the nuclear holocaust, right? And Kevin Costner. Is that the right
nope,
thing?
Nope, not Costner. It was Don Johnson.
Oh, that's right.
Yep. I think that's right. Costner hadn't done really much of anything yet. Anyway,
I think you're right.
So there's a remake of it. Interesting. Kind of want to know what's up with that.
Yeah, the remake is really good. But I want to go back and play the old school one now. I
guess. Yeah.
That's on our list.
Well, in the meantime, send us those emails. Just be like Dan and Tom here. That email address is playretroshow@gmail.com. playretroshow@gmail.com. All right. Our next big discussion, a long time coming. We've been talking about this since we started this damn show. Pac-Man. All things Pac-Man. We're doing it in the shadow of this new release, which gives us a little bit more to talk about in terms of what Pac-Man is doing today in 2022, how you can play it, whether that thing's worth picking up, or even playing on Game Pass if that's where you're playing it. But really, we're going to dig deeper into the hole of Pac-Man. There's
the
some stuff.
The lore of Pac-Man.
There's stuff you guys don't know. There are games in Japan that never came out here that are weird as shit. There's a Tetris-like game they made. There's a million things that happen in the Pac-Man universe that none of you are aware of. So we're going to bring all that to light.
I can't wait to do a show and tell and all my Pac-Man crap that I have.
This is going to be a beast for serious.
Like, yeah. I'm almost afraid of this one.
I know. It scares me a little bit, too. And you could say, well, Scott, why don't we just focus on the mainline stuff? Well, that sounds fine.
Everybody's done that.
We want to go deep, man. What's the one called? Let's see. I'm going to pull it up real quick because I played it this afternoon and I really miss it. I loved it at the time. It's called. Oh, what do I have recently played? Hold on.
Ziggurat in the chat room is saying, I watched the TV show a lot and I'm ready with my lore. I'm going to have to watch some at least one episode. It's been a while.
Oh, Pac-Man Arrangement. Do you remember Pac-Man Arrangement?
Oh, yes, I do. That was
GBA, I think.
Yeah, I do remember that one.
May have gone somewhere else too, but Pac-Man Arrangement was weird and great.
Yeah,
one of my favorites. So lots to say. We're gonna go deep. It'll be good.
Very colorful.
Yep. And I've been playing Championship 2 on my Xbox. I've been playing the Championship 1 on the new collection. I love those two games a lot. There's a lot to say about Pac-Man and a huge history, and we'll talk about the TV show and all that stuff. Okay.
I love the Ghostly Adventures. Did you ever play that? A little later on, but it was Pac-Man and the Ghostly Adventures.
No,
also a cartoon,
I didn't.
But it was on Steam.
Was that
and
good?
I purchased that, and it was a lot of fun.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So good. Like, holds up good or no good?
Well, I mean, I don't know if it holds up or not. I think it's on the Xbox One. It's a more recent game, so I don't know if we'll get into it. Like 2013, so it's not really as much retro. It's just, another facet of the round ball that is Pac-Man.
Well, I got good news, too, because I've got a really, really specific Pac-Man story from when I was a kid that will
Did Pac-Man bite you?
No, but we had a cocktail version of Pac-Man that was spent a bunch of time in the house before it ended up in an arcade. And there's something real funny we used to do to Pac-Man machines. Like, I'll save this for next week.
Tell me you didn't poop on the Pac-Man arcade machine.
None of that. It's like,
all right.
It's...
Don't tell me now.
Yeah, I'm not going to
save it for the Pac show.
I'll tell you next week. It's pretty great, though. Anyway, that'll be next time right here on Play Retro. Don't forget, follow us on our Twitch channels. I'm at Frog Pants. You can find Brian over there at Brian Dunaway. And you should do that because he plays a lot of these retro games. I'm sure you're going to see a lot of Pac-Man out of him in the next week.
Oh, yeah. You're going to see so much Pac-Man.
Check those out. Yeah, it's good
shove
stuff.
Shove Pac-Man in your face.
And what else? That's it for us. That's it. Oh, our Patreon. Please go to our Patreon and support it. Here's all you got to do. Patreon.com/PlateRetro. And here's why I want you to do it. Because you could be like Anthony Gentile and Jonathan Pritchard. Who just joined our Patreon family. Those guys are brand new patrons since last we met, and we're really happy to have them on board. Be like Anthony, be like Johnny, and get rad things for free, including never have to hear another ad on a show again, ever.
Oh, thank God. And plus, you're helping support my video game habit where I'm going out and I'm becoming a bit of a preservationist. I'm wanting to preserve stuff. I don't want things to die. Matter of fact, I'm so tempted to order that stupid tennis game for the PlayStation just so I can scan the manual in, just so I can upload it to archive.org.
Because you want to preserve
the fact
it.
That,
yep.
The fact that it's not there annoys me. Also, I posted earlier on Twitter about Google blocking the PlayStation news groups, the Usenet groups from years ago. All that archive of people discussing and having those heated discussions about the original PlayStation, they're gone.
How
do we get them back?
Yeah, we got to get them back.
Responding.
Somebody somewhere's got logs. We got to do it. Let's get that done.
Right.
That'll do it for us. Thank you all for listening. We'll see you next time. In the meantime, go play something retro, something old.
Play Pac-Man.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes. Get more at frogpants.com.
Now entering Bifloss South Pole Observation Base airspace.
Whatever, game.